Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. A terrorist state is in the making in the center of the Middle East, and it's by design. Indeed, Assad is gone, but so is Syria. Forced regime change has brought about state failure, and we all know the obvious winners and losers. Crosstalking Syria, I'm joined by my guest, Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. In Beirut, we have Leila Khartoum. She is editor-in-chief of Menin Uncensored. And in Brussels, we cross to Eli Manier. He is a veteran war correspondent and political analyst. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mohammed, let me go to you first in Tehran. In my introduction, I hope I didn't verge on hyperbole, but we have a terrorist state being recognized by the West in its infancy, and as a result, we have a failed state. The civil war is back on. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Yes, this dirty war has ultimately bore fruit, and the United States has been able to, along with Mr. Erdogan and Netanyahu, has been able to create a country controlled by al-Qaeda. We have to remember that Jolani was a deputy of Abu Bakr Baghdadi, the head of ISIS. When it was the Islamic State of Iraq, he was in charge of Syria under the name of the Nusra Front. And he was the head of al-Qaeda in Syria until, in a public relations act, he separated from al-Qaeda in the presence of senior al-Qaeda figures, and they were nodding their heads, yes, he's no longer with us. So the United States has succeeded, and now we're seeing the devastation. We're seeing the Israelis destroy the infrastructure, the military infrastructure of the country, the security infrastructure. We're seeing the looting of the central bank. We're seeing they were saying that the Syrian government kills people, murders people, takes people to prison, and I'm sure the Syrian government was not a wonderful government. But they're now killing people on the streets. They're gunning down people in hospitals. They are humiliating people in public. They're hanging people. And they're also allowing the country to fall apart. And as the Israelis advance on Damascus, they're doing nothing.
Yeah, well, Leila, I mean, it's quite curious. We have Western governments cheering on the change of power. As Mohammed has kind of pointed out, they don't like to go into detail about who these people are. I call them terrorists because that's what the U.S. government calls them. And that's what the leader of this group, they call him a terrorist. There's a $10 million bounty on his head, but they don't use that term. How can you explain that the U.S., Israel, and Turkey are continuing to bomb a country that has had regime change? How does that make any sense? Go ahead, in Beirut.
Well, actually, it makes a lot of sense if you look at it from a military perspective. You don't want the Syrian army to continue to have military capabilities that at any point when these multiple terrorist factions on the ground start fighting over power grab and trying to divide the country between themselves, we have ISIS at one hand, the SDF, you have HTS, among others, and the Muslim Brotherhood and the PKK. When they start fighting among each other, each one wants its part. You don't want the Syrian Arab Army to have its current capabilities and the air force it has to be able to deter one of them at least. So this is what we saw the Israelis do, bombard the military infrastructure for the Syrian Arab Army to also prevent it from rebuilding itself for the next few years, which means you will have a failed and very weak state next to you that's divided among all of these terrorist groups, and nobody can stop them. For Turkey, it wants to create its own buffer zone, much like the Israelis do, but from the northern side of Syria, and it wants to create not only a buffer zone, but take and annex more land. We have multiple Turkish, what you call, military bases in Idlib and in other areas, including Aleppo. They have entered it military-wise, and they want to eliminate or stop the threat that they consider, which is basically the Kurds, the PKK. The PKK on the other hand dream of annexing that place, and they are also attacking the Syrian Arab forces and their military infrastructure.
Well, you just described my introduction. Elijah, let me go to you in Brussels. I mean, given what our two guests have already said, there is no Syrian sovereignty here. There is no Syrian government. I mean, there may be a new puppet government in Damascus, but it's not governing. It's certainly not governing the country. And to make things worse, these outside powers, as I mentioned, the U.S., Israel, and Turkey, want to make sure that there is no infrastructure for a state that used to be called Syria. Go ahead in Brussels.
Well, they did not only destroy the infrastructure, there is nothing that Syria can defend itself with today. The Israelis acknowledged 300 attacks on Syrian soil in the last 48 hours, destroying everything that Syria had, because Syria used to manufacture weapons and manufacture missiles in long range and medium range, and it is quite advanced in this technology. And we have seen the Israeli destroying everything and the Americans talking about observing the new Syrian leaders if they respect international laws, why Israel is annexing more territory and they've reached 25 kilometers south of Damascus today. So we see that the Israelis are advancing and we don't know where they are going to stop, what are the ultimate plan, but we know one thing, that Syria can no longer defend itself and is territory out for grab. Anyone can take a piece of Syria today. The only weapon that are left is only for internal, domestic, and infighting use. So they encouraging the Syrian to keep only weapons that they can fight among themselves. And we also have seen how the 17 groups that form the new leadership, they have nothing in common, really. And they are not expected to lead the country altogether under one leadership. And we have seen instruction giving and behavior that is completely different. So we don't expect any stability in Syria.
Okay, I'm going to go back to Mohammed in Tehran. All through this program, we're missing the words democracy, freedom, tolerance. I thought that's what the Syrian revolution was all about. But we haven't heard it on this program yet. Will we? Go ahead, Mohammed.
No, there's nothing linked to democracy throughout this whole dirty war. Not the democracy was a facade from the very beginning. The West called it called these terrorist freedom fighters before people knew what ISIS actually was. They called them freedom fighters, and they weren't telling them that this was al-Qaeda. And your two guests made some very important points. The Syrian army, much of the equipment that was destroyed has nothing to do with the needs of the Israeli regime. The Syrian Air Force is not capable of confronting the Israeli Air Force. There are elements within the Syrian armed forces that would be dangerous to the Israeli regime, like a missile capability. But they destroyed the Air Force not because it was a threat to Israel, but for two reasons. One, as was previously correctly pointed out, so that no one can control Syria, so that the central government cannot use the Air Force to bomb rebels. But also, I think this was a stupid move by Netanyahu, because Netanyahu, for his own selfish interests, he's bombing all these positions in Syria and all of this infrastructure to tell Israeli Zionists that, look, I'm powerful, I've defeated my enemies. That is a smart move, I suppose, among Zionists. But what he has done is that he's exposed the new regime in Damascus. They are not going to do anything about Israel.
Exactly.
They are not going to confront the Israeli regime. Erdogan, who was, barking nonsense about Palestine for years is now that he has a border with Israel, he is not going to do anything about it. He is after it, as pointed out correctly. He is after his buffer zone, his interests in the north, perhaps expanding his Ottoman realm of influence even further. But he's not going to do anything for the Palestinian people. And actually, what Erdogan and the Americans and Netanyahu did was, and sadly, they dealt a severe blow to the resistance.
Yep.
And turned a defeat for the Israeli regime, because in order for the Israeli regime to declare victory, the other side has to be defeated. But they've turned a defeat for the Israeli regime, which has been delegitimized and which has failed to capture territory in the north and has failed to vanquish Hamas in the south and Islamic Jihad. They've turned that into a victory for the Israeli regime.
Okay, we're about to go to the break, and I don't want to cut off my next guest, so I'll ask you a follow-up question, Mohammed. This Golani, who does he answer to?
That's a very good question, but I think he answers to a host of different people. I think he answers to Erdogan. He answers to Western intelligence agencies. Obviously, his interview with CNN shows a very strong relationship with the political establishment in the United States. CNN tried very hard to whitewash his crimes and to make him look like a moderate, and even his clothes looks like the clothes of Zelensky. There are very powerful Western elements in what he's doing.
Yeah, I noticed the Zelensky garb, and he trimmed his beard, but I doubt his ideas have changed. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Syria. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Syria. Okay, let's go back to Leila and Beirut. I'm going to be a little facetious here, so take it on board here. So the mantra was Assad has to go. Well, he's gone. So does that mean the sanctions come to an end? Does that mean the illegal occupation of American troops in Syria, that's going to end? Because Assad's gone, the precondition has been met. You can take it from there.
Well, I highly doubt that the Americans are going to leave, because we heard Biden saying recently that he's going to keep the troops in the U.S. The White House basically said that they're going to keep the troops in Syria to make sure that basically there's no what you call an explosion of the situation. At the end of the day, the whole thing was done for the Americans to have their military bases in the region, much like the Russians had in Syria, and to control the resources for Syria, so Syria cannot benefit from, for example, its energy resources, among other things. However, the way you look at it, I mean, at the end of the day, nobody's going to rule Syria. It's going to go into a bloodbath. As Professor Mirandi had said, and correctly so, it's going to be a civil war. They are going to fight among each other. There's nobody who's going to single-handedly rule Syria, because they haven't agreed on a certain person.
Elisha, I have to assume, because the U.S. wants to maintain hegemony in the region, one ideal way of doing that would be actually setting up a Kurdish state. Now, that would mix up the works really seriously. Chaos on steroids. But I think they may do it. What are your thoughts?
I don't think so, because they've tried in Iraq a few years ago, and they did not support an independent state in Kurdistan. So having the PKK version, the Syrian version of the PKK, establishing what is called the Rojava, is not going to happen now, because the Iraqis and the Turks will not accept a Kurdish state on their borders, and even Iran will not accept that. So it is not something that can happen, and America is not interested in leaving the area. Establishing a state means there is no point for them to stay in Syria. However, they want to stay because that serves the Israeli national security, and they want to keep control on Syria, and deprive it from its food basket and its energy. This is why they are there.
Eli, all the more so to create a fictitious state called Kurdistan, and the Americans are there to protect it. I see your point here. Mohammed, where does Iran stand in all of this? Because there's a lot of gleeful talk in Western capitals. Iran has suffered a strategic defeat. We can go on and on. Of course, they do not go into the thick description that what kind of relationship that Iran had with Syria, not necessarily with Mr. Assad here. How is Iran looking at it, and how is it looking forward? Because it's got a mess on its borders in a very, very big way, and there's also an intended headache, obviously, created against Iran. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Iran obviously never wanted ISIS and al-Qaeda to rule over Syria. And that's exactly why Iran got involved from the very beginning. If you recall, Iran or Hezbollah or the others, they didn't get involved in Syria until 2013, 2 years after this all started, and only after tens of thousands of foreign fighters had been brought into Syria already. It was then that they got involved. So for Iran, this is a tragedy, and it is a major setback, to say the least. However, while in the short run, it is a major setback, but in the long run, I think that the sides that are going to lose the most are countries like Turkey, countries in the region, countries like Saudi Arabia, Jordan. This is going to cause instability because now these groups, they're euphoric. They are drunk in their victory and they want to expand. And if Jolani does not accept to move forward for greater conquest, then he will be targeted himself.
Yep.
Some of these extremists are far worse than the likes of Jolani. And the economic burden for Turkey is also going to be huge. Either Turkey is going to have to put in, or Qatar is going to have to put in a lot of money for a very long period of time, or the situation is going to get worse, as it is getting worse, and this is going to cause animosity, friction, to say the least, but also it's going to be a security problem for Turkey and an economic burden for the country.
Leila, I saw you nodding your head as Professor Mirandi was speaking. Why were you doing that? Go ahead.
And I nearly smiled because I had an interview earlier this morning, but in Arabic, and I almost said the same thing, and I agree with him on every single word that he said. Remember, when you have borders, you share long borders with a country that's going to turn into another Libya or Iraq. That's the scenario that we're foreseeing for Syria at the moment, because we have seen this theatrical play happen before, especially when you have international players pushing these terrorists on the ground. It is bound to have rogue agents who are radical enough, as Professor Mirandi said, who will infiltrate these borders, go to other countries, and basically try to enforce their agenda over there. Again, and then you have also the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood on the side wanted to take over. It's a power grab game over here. They want to take over power in Syria, but not only Syria. They've had those demonstrations in Jordan. So we do expect the Muslim Brotherhood, being drunk on power, will also try to make a move in Jordan. The suicide bombers that we saw back in 2011, 2012, 2013, they will go back to Turkey. And then you're going to have that expand in the region. Remember, also, Jolani not only threatened Lebanon and Egypt, but like going forward, he's going to go supposedly to Jerusalem. That means we're going to have a regional infiltration by rogue agents, if not Jolani himself. And if he refuses, as Professor Mirandi said, he will be a target himself.
You know, Elijah, it's been mentioned here what happened in Libya with the overthrow of the Gaddafi regime, and that is part of the historical record, and it is being still played out to this day. We all know that precedent. Was it intentional to do the same exact thing in Syria? Is that the intention? Chaos? Go ahead.
It looks like it at the moment. I mean, it's too early to judge because we had it only a few days. In 11 days, everything happened in Syria, everything changed. And now suddenly we have the Americans talking a possibility of lifting the sanctions. As long as the new leaders are not contesting what Israel is doing, and they're not mentioning Israel. Their enemy is only Iran and Hezbollah. Therefore, for the moment, we see Turkey as a NATO country is the main player. Is he going to continue in control of the situation? Is he going to control the jihadists of different groups? He has many groups that belong and fight and are paid by Turkey directly. Is he going to be able to make sure to direct everybody, the 17 groups, wherever he wants? This is too early to judge, because what we have seen in Latakia, the mass execution, is different from what we have seen in Damascus or in other Christian and Alawite areas. So it's still very confused, the image and the Syrian theater. And we haven't seen, again, the end of the Israeli destruction in Syria and advance in Syrian territory. So all that is very unclear at the moment. If this is going to be another Libya, it is going to be divided Syria, where the jihadists will start fighting. They return to their real skin from the first beginning, when they were formed as Jabhat al-Nusra, that is part of ISIS, that turned into al-Qaeda, and then remained the same Takfiri, but under different names. And suddenly they say, now they are moderate. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen them, the same so-called moderate in Idlib, since 2019, behaving any different from the Salafist jihadist Takfiri behavior. So I don't think it's something very clear now to say it is going to be like Libya, or who's going to take part of
but
Syria.
Maybe the only difference is the factions fighting in Syria will be very well-funded, okay? Mohammed, I'd like to finish the program on Gaza. The genocide continues there, and we can't forget what's going on there. This is what the Israelis want, and Zionists will say this was all worth it because of the victories they have had experienced against Hezbollah and now Syria. But the genocide continues. Go ahead.
Well, I don't believe that the Israelis had a victory over Hezbollah, although they hit Hezbollah very hard. But the fact that Hezbollah, under very difficult circumstances, was able to hold their territory and to prevent them from taking southern Lebanon, I think that was a victory. The defeat is Syria, and that, of course, affects Hezbollah too. But you're absolutely correct. This is very tragic, not only for the people of Gaza, who've been forgotten. And we have to remember that Mr. Erdogan has been transporting Baku oil, cheap Baku oil, to Israel for the last 14 months. He continues to have relations, political relations, intelligence, senior intelligence officers go back and forth between the two. So he's very much responsible for people forgetting Gaza, but we shouldn't. We all should continue to focus.
And we won't forget. And on that note, all I can say to my wonderful guests, to be continued. I want to thank my guests in Brussels, Beirut, and in Tehran. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.